Tonight we're going to be looking at Psalm 54. That psalm was written at one of the grimmest points in David's life. We read earlier from the first book of Samuel, chapter 23. And that chapter tells us the background to this psalm. As I pointed out, it follows on from another very ugly, tragic episode in David's life. The episode that led to the slaughter of Ahimelech and all his family. A man called Doeg slandered David, slandered Ahimelech the priest, betrayed them to Saul, and as a result, Ahimelech and all his family were murdered without mercy. And David felt that he was responsible for that. He felt that he had been reckless, careless, and that had led to that tragic episode. That episode with Doeg. That episode which led to the death of these innocent men, women and children must have left David shaken, troubled, maybe demoralized. And yet David still knew that he had to carry on serving God. He still had to carry on fulfilling his responsibilities. That's what you see in the opening section of 1 Samuel chapter 23. The news comes to David that the Philistines have attacked the Israelite town of Keilah. They're robbing the threshing floors. If they're allowed to get away with this, the people of Keilah will be left without food. They'll be left to starve. The town may indeed be sacked by the Philistines. And David feels that he's got a responsibility in that situation. After all, he had been anointed by Samuel as the future king over Israel. And to be the king means that you have to defend your people. So when he hears that the Philistines are attacking Keilah, David says, well, does that mean I've got to go to their defense? Legally, on paper, he's got no responsibility to do that. If it's anybody's job, it's Saul's job. But David knows that God has laid this responsibility on him. And so he turns to the Lord and he inquires of the Lord, shall I go and attack these Philistines? And the answer comes back, go and attack the Philistines. Go and save Keilah. It would have been so easy, wouldn't it, for David to say, look, I don't have any responsibility for these people. I don't see why I should go fighting for Israel at all. I mean, look what Saul's done to me. He's driven me into exile. Look how Saul's army are pursuing me right now. Why on earth should I start fighting to defend anybody? It's all I can do to save my own life. I'm a man on the run. But instead, David says, I must. If the Lord wants me to go up and fight to defend his people, I must. And that's the command he receives from the Lord. Yes, you must. David's men don't like it. David's men say to him, look, we're in danger here. We're being hunted by Saul now. If we come out of hiding and go to Keilah, well, then we'll be really exposed. We'll be laying ourselves open to attack. No, David, don't ask this of us. And David goes back to the Lord. He inquires of the Lord again. And again the Lord says to him, you must go down to Keilah, for I'm going to give the Philistines into your hand. And David somehow manages to persuade his men to go with him. And they go down to Keilah and they fight the Philistines. And they win a great victory. They strike the Philistines with a great blow. And so David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. Catch a glimpse here of what sort of man David is. A man who's willing to sacrifice his own safety. A man who is prepared to put his own neck on the block in order to serve the Lord and in order to defend God's people. And you catch a glimpse of what sacrificial service really means. He must have realized what danger he was putting himself in. He must have realized that he was forfeiting, or that he could forfeit, the goodwill of his men. He must have been going against his own inclinations. But he's willing to carry out this sacrificial service because he cares about God's people and because he cares about God's will. But what is the outcome? What happens as the result of David's self-sacrificing determination to rescue the people of Keilah? He's there. He's in that town. After the battle, he and his men for a little while are lodged in the town. And somebody goes to Saul to tell Saul that David is there in the town of Keilah. And Saul gathers together his army to march on Keilah in order to besiege David and his men. And Saul says, I've got him now. He's trapped now. We couldn't find him when he was out in the wilderness. But oh, David's made a big mistake now. David's come out of hiding. David's gone into a city where there are walls and gates where we can besiege him, where there's no way he can slip away. David knows that he could be in big trouble now. Saul's army is closing in from all sides. Again, David inquires of the Lord. O Lord, the God of Israel, your servant has surely heard that Saul is seeking to come to Keilah to destroy the city on my account. Will the men of Keilah surrender me into his hand? And the Lord says, yes, they will. They will. That's shattering. It's a horrible glimpse of human cowardice, isn't it? David has been willing to fight for the people of Keilah. He's put himself in danger for them. And yet they're ready to hand him over to Saul. They're willing to betray him. What ingratitude! It's horrible to think about. David and his men manage to escape from Keilah before Saul gets there. And David and his men return to the wilderness, hiding out in the mountains, hiding out in the caves. And we read in 23:14, and Saul sought him every day. Saul doesn't give up. He hates David so much. Yes, he missed his opportunity at Keilah. David managed to escape. But Saul's not going to give up. Every day his men are out there searching for David. relentless, determined quest to destroy David. Every night, David lies down to sleep, knowing that Saul's men are out there searching for him. Every day, he has to ask himself the question, where are my enemies? Are they closing in around me? What are their plans? There's only one way in which Saul is going to find David, or there's only one way in which it's likely that Saul will find David, out there in the wilderness of Ziph. And that is if the people who live out there in the wilderness betray David. Then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, isn't David hiding among us in the strongholds at Horesh, on the hill of Hachilah, which is south of Yeshimon? Now come down, O king, and we'll hand him over to you. David was let down by the people of Keilah. Maybe you could say they were afraid. Maybe you could say that they were frightened that if they didn't hand over David, Saul would avenge himself on them. But what reason do these people have? The people from the wilderness of Ziph, what reason do they have to betray David? What grudge have they got against him? He's a helpless fugitive on the run. And he's the man who's been fighting for God's people, for all of them. He's the man who defeated Goliath when Goliath was determined to enslave all of Israel. The only reason these people, these Ziphites, are free men today is because of David and his courage and his faithfulness. He's the one who's been willing again and again to go into battle on their behalf as well as on behalf of all the other Israelites. And yet they're willing. In fact, they're not just willing to hand him over to Saul. They take the initiative. They're the ones who go to Saul saying, we've got him. We know where he is. And we'll hand him over to you. And Saul says to them, may you be blessed by the Lord. For you've had compassion on me. I'm the poor victim, says Saul. So ill-treated by that brute David. But you felt sorry for me. Oh, may the Lord bless you for it, you Ziphites. He's the king. He's the man in power. He's the man with the army. He's the man with the wealth. He's the man with the palace. But he says, oh, you felt sorry for me. May you be blessed by the Lord. Now, says Saul to the Ziphites, go and make yet more sure. Go and find out exactly where he is. Take note of all the lurking places where he hides. Come back to me with sure information and then I'll go with you. They're going to spy on David. They're going to dog his footsteps. They're going to hunt him down. They're going to make sure there's no escape for David. Wherever David goes, he's going to be hunted. Saul gets nearer and nearer. Saul closes in on him. There's a point at which it seems inevitable that David and his men are going to be captured. It says Saul went on one side of the mountain, David and his men on the other side of the mountain, and David was hurrying to get away from Saul. Most, they're a few hundred yards apart. Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them. The moment of crisis is very close. And it's at that moment that a messenger comes to Saul saying, The Philistines have attacked again, and you're needed elsewhere. And Saul returns from pursuing after David and heads off against the Philistines. And that place was called the Rock of Escape. That's the story that we have in 1 Samuel chapter 23. And Psalm 54 was written when the Ziphites went and told Saul, "Is not David hiding among us?" This psalm, Psalm 54, is David's response to that horrible realization that the Ziphites were planning to betray him to Saul. Let's think for a little moment about what David had to contend with, what he had to cope with at this point in time. Firstly, ingratitude. He's been the victim of such ingratitude. It started with Saul. Saul owed so much to David, didn't he? It was David who saved Saul's bacon, who saved Saul's kingdom. When Goliath came and threatened the Israelites and issued his great challenge, Saul was helpless. Saul was doomed. And it was David who stepped in to rescue him. It was David who was willing to lay his life on the line to rescue Saul. And ever since then, David's been a faithful servant of Saul. He's the one who, again and again, had led the Israelites into battle. He's the one who had been the key man in attack and in defense. Is Saul grateful? Saul hates him for it. Saul is eaten up with jealousy and bitterness. Saul is determined to kill David. But David's done nothing wrong. David's never done anything against Saul. It's just sheer ingratitude. But then it's not just David, is it? Sorry, it's not just Saul, is it, who's showing David such ingratitude? The men of Keilah. The people whom David has saved at risk of his own life, they're willing to surrender David to his enemy Saul. And then these people out in the wilderness, the Ziphites, what have they got against David? David's been their protector. But they're willing to hand him over. David must have felt, everyone, wherever I go, I'm just meeting such ingratitude. It doesn't matter what I do for people. It doesn't matter how I pour myself out for people. It doesn't matter what it costs me to help people. They turn round and attack me. Why can't people show some gratitude to me? Saul thinks he's the victim. But when you look at David, what? He's a victim of the most horrible ingratitude. That's the first thing he has to contend with. The depressing, demoralizing effect. When you know that you're surrounded by people who are ungrateful, that nothing you ever do will please them. Nothing you ever do will win their hearts. Nothing you ever do will turn them towards you. But then it goes beyond that, because ingratitude becomes betrayal. That's the second thing that David has to cope with, isn't it? Just the feeling that he can't trust anybody. If he goes down to Keilah, he can't feel safe there, because the people there are likely to betray him. If he goes and hides out in the wilderness of Ziph, he can't trust the people out there, because they're liable to betray him. When he was in the town of Nob, he sees a man standing there. That man's going to betray him. Oh, it's one thing to have people around you who are ungrateful to you. But when you're living in a situation where you know that people are out to stab you in the back, where you can't trust anybody, oh, again, it's so demoralizing. And then thirdly, there's simply danger. He's got to cope with danger. Fearful danger. If he falls into the hands of Saul, this madman Saul who hates him so much, anything could happen to him. He could be tortured. He could be humiliated. And then he could be cut to pieces. What might happen to his family? What might happen to his brothers? What might happen to his parents? What might happen to his wives, his children? Who knows where Saul would stop? David's living all the time on the edge of utter disaster. If he puts one foot wrong, it's ruin. It's ruin for himself. It's ruin for all those whom he loves. And then the fourth thing he has to contend with, I couldn't really find a word that expresses what I mean here. But he has to contend with the ongoingness of it all. He has to contend with the fact that it's just going on and on and on and on. Remember what it said, that Saul sought him every day. It's one thing to have to face a great crisis and then to be able to say, right, well, that's over. But it's not like that for David. There's just this ongoing, appalling situation. There's no moment at which David can relax. There are no days off. There are no holidays from this. Day after day, week after week, he's living on his nerve ends. He's never getting a proper night's sleep. Never able to let go of the situation for a moment. When's it going to end? There's no light at the end of the tunnel. David has to live with that, this grinding sense of a situation that could go on and on and on and on and on. And then a fifth thing he has to cope with. He has to cope with repetition. The same horrible things happening repeatedly. You know, sometimes something really horrible happens in your life, in your family, and you live through it, and it leaves you scarred, it leaves you hurt, but you say, lightning never strikes twice. You say, at least that's over, and I can't believe it's ever going to happen again. It does for David. Doeg betrays him. But surely Doeg's unique. He's just a malicious, vicious man. It wouldn't happen again. The men of Keilah betray him. Oh, well, maybe that was just a sort of freak. They were all just swept away by fear. But it won't happen again. The men of Ziph betray him. To live through a nightmare once, but then the same nightmare repeats itself. That's David's experience. When he hears the news that the men of Ziph have gone to Saul to betray him, it's the third time it's happened. And then one last thing he has to cope with, and again, I couldn't find the right word. Let's call it inversion. He's got to cope with a situation where everything is turned on its head, where the people involved are inverting reality. They're inverting the truth. Do you remember when Saul was told that David was there in Keilah? What does Saul say? He says, God has given him into my hand. Saul is absolutely sure of his own innocence. Saul is absolutely sure that David is the criminal and he's the righteous one. Saul is absolutely sure that God is fighting for him and fighting against David. God has given him into my hand. And then the words he speaks to the Ziphites, may you be blessed by the Lord. Saul talks as though he's the one with a hotline to God, as though he can call down blessing on people. Saul's a murderer. Saul's hunting down an innocent man. Saul's a thug. And yet he's convinced that he's the righteous one. Have you ever had to cope with that? Where you've been in a situation where somebody is acting in a blatantly wicked way, and yet they're absolutely sure that they are innocent, that they're righteous, and that you're the one who's acting wickedly. And you begin, it's surreal. You begin to feel you're going mad. Is it me? Have I lost touch with reality? Everybody's acting as if black is white and white is black. Why are all these people against David, the one who's defended them, who's fought for them? Can they all have gone mad? Or is it me that's gone mad? It's a fearful thing. It's disorientating. But that's what David has to cope with. He's got to cope with the fact that he's surrounded by people who are ungrateful, who feel they owe him nothing after all he's done for them. He's got to cope with the fact that there are people who are ready to betray him. He can't trust anybody. He's got to cope with the fact that he's living in immediate danger, and that danger extends to all the people he loves. He's got to cope with the fact that this situation is one that just goes on and on and on and on, and there's no light at the end of a tunnel and there's no let up. He's got to cope with the fact that the same things, the same horrible things have happened again and again and again. He's got to cope with the fact that everybody else seems to think he's the guilty one. He's the one who's responsible. And that it's his enemy, the man who's hunting him down out of sheer insane hatred, is the one who's in the right. And it's in that position that he sings to God the words of Psalm 54. Let's just very briefly look at what we have in Psalm 54. Five things. Number one, David's appeal. Oh God, save me by your name and vindicate me by your might. Save me by your name. What does David mean? Well, you know what God's name is, don't you? We've spoken about it often enough. Yahweh. The one who is. The one who cannot change. The one who is utterly trustworthy. The one who keeps all his promises. Oh God, Save me by your name, says David. Save me by being yourself, by being true to yourself. Show that you are the unchanging God. Show that the promises you made to me once still stand. Show me that you have not changed and that you will not change. I'm surrounded by people who are totally unreliable. I can't rest on them. But you are the unchanging God. Save me because you're the unchanging God. And vindicate me by your might. I don't have any might. I'm worn out. I'm exhausted. I'm at the end of my tether. But you are mighty. You have all power in your hands. Then use your power to vindicate me. You know what the word vindicate means? To establish that I'm in the right. Everyone else may think that I'm the guilty party. Everybody else may be backing Saul. But oh God, please vindicate me. David doesn't just want to escape from danger. He wants to be vindicated. Isn't that a natural human longing? When you're in the right, you want to be shown that you're in the right. He's pleading with God to step in as his vindicator. So first David appeals, he cries to God from the heart for rescue and for vindication. Oh God, hear my prayer. Give ear to the words of my mouth. Oh God, you're the listening God. So please listen to me as I cry to you. That's David's appeal. And then there's description. David describes the situation. For strangers have risen against me. Ruthless men seek my life. They don't set God before themselves. Why does David describe the situation to God? God knows already, doesn't he? He knows all about it. And yet, God invites his people to tell him. To tell him about every situation that they're in. To describe those situations. And we find comfort. We find relief in doing it. Relief in knowing that we've spread it out before God. Child runs to mum, saying, I've cut my knee. It's very obvious she's cut her knee. The blood's trickling down. But she wants to tell mum that her knee's hurting. It's hurting, mum. David's a hurting man. So he tells God. Tells God all about his hurt. Tells God all about this crippling situation. The strangers, the men of Ziph, who have risen against him. The ruthless men, Saul and his army, who are seeking his life. And he can't help but say, and whatever they say, they don't set God before them. Saul may claim that he's acting in God's name, but it's not true, you know. David pours it all out before God. And as he appeals to God, and as he describes his situation, David is able to pronounce this great affirmation. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life, and he will return the evil to my enemies. In your faithfulness, put an end to them. I don't know whether he felt that sort of confidence before he started writing the psalm, but by the time he's reached this point, as he cries out to God, as he describes the situation before God, he finds that there is a new confidence surging up within him. He's confident that God will help him, that God does uphold him, that God will act in justice and deal with the enemies. that God will put an end to them because God is faithful. So appeal and description become bold affirmation. And then David speaks the words of his vow. With a free will offering, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. David knows that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. David is certain that God has heard his prayer and that God will answer him. David is certain that God, who is good and whose name is good, will not fail him. And already he's thinking about the day when he'll be able to show his gratitude to God. He thinks about the fact that he's going to be able to bring free will offerings to God, that he will thank God one day for all that God has done for him through these dark days. That's faith, isn't it? That's faith if you can say, in the midst of the darkness, in the midst of the tragedy, if you can say, one day I'm going to be thanking God. One day I'm going to be thanking God for what he is doing for me now. That's the point David reaches. And then finally, there's the cry of triumph. For he has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. I don't know whether David added that last verse when it was all over, when Saul and his army had finally been chased away, or indeed at a later point when David was finally free from all Saul's attacks, or whether David is saying, even now I know this is true. I know it will happen, and so even now I'm going to sing as if it's already come to pass. I'm not sure. One thing is certain, it's a cry of triumph. There's the certainty in David's heart that he has been delivered, or he will be delivered from every trouble. Even in the wilderness, in the midst of all of these trials, God was gracious to David. God used him. We've seen that God did use him to rescue the people of Keilah. God guided him. God sent a priest to him out in the wilderness, a priest who had an ephod, which was the instrument used for seeking guidance from God. And that was how David managed to get direction from God, guidance from God in every situation. God did protect him again and again and again. God gave him a friend, a wonderful, loyal friend. We missed that bit out when we went through the chapter briefly. But you'll have noticed it, how God sent Jonathan to him and how utterly faithful and loyal Jonathan was. So many ways God showed his kindness to David in the midst of all the pain and the confusion and the trouble. We shouldn't forget that when we're talking about all that was bleak, all that was horrible about the situation. We shouldn't forget the evidence that God was there looking after David, using him, guiding him, protecting him, giving him Jonathan as his friend. Oh, that was wonderful, wasn't it? But in the end, God delivered him. In the end, David was rescued from every trouble, and he did look in triumph on his enemies. Can you sing this psalm? And can you sing the cry of triumph at the end of the psalm? Can you believe that one day you're going to be delivered from all your troubles? Can you believe that one day all the enemies that trouble your soul will be defeated? Sin, Satan, death. Can you believe that one day you're going to be free from every pain? Can you believe that? And believing that, can you rise above whatever situation you're in now? If you can, you should sing this psalm. Did the Lord Jesus sing this psalm? I think the Lord Jesus sang all the psalms. And he had more reason to sing this psalm than any of us did. Was there ever a man who endured such ingratitude from those he had come to save? Was there ever a man who was so betrayed? Was there ever a man who faced such danger? Was there ever a man who had to persevere through such exhaustion, such weariness? Was there ever a man who was so struck by repeated pain, repeated tragedy? Was there ever a man who had to face such inversion of reality? His enemies laughed and said, "He's the blasphemer. He's the drunkard. He's the liar. He's the criminal. He's the one who sinned against God." And these were the wicked leaders of Israel, ruthless politicians, daring to say those things about God's innocent son. Was there ever a man who had to face such bizarre, surreal aspersions? He sang this psalm. And he triumphed. He came through it by faith. And now he reigns. He reigns at the right hand of the Father. He's been delivered from every trouble. His eye has looked in triumph on his enemies. And if we're united to him, that's going to be our experience too.